from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll chat with artist Douglas David about his new work featuring urban landscapes.
And I'll get a preview of this year's Start With Art Luncheon.
And I'll talk with the artistic director of the new Indianapolis City Ballet. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All this and more right after the latest news from NPR. Painter Douglas David is known for his lush, impressionistic Indiana landscapes and floral still lives, which is why Travis DiNicola was a bit surprised when he drove by the Vogue nightclub one night to see David out on the sidewalk with his easel and paints capturing the Broad Ripple nightlife. This painting and others are all a part of a new urban landscape series that Douglas David is showing at the University of Indianapolis. Travis chatted with Douglas to find out more.
For people who know your work, I mean, just, you know, very sort of lush, impressionistic, still lifes, Indiana landscapes. But your new show also features a lot of urban landscapes.
You know, I am doing some cityscapes now.
Cityscapes.
Yeah, that's going to be at University of Indianapolis. And it is exciting because what it is a combination of all my work. And actually, this is my big show for the fall. So mm-hmm. This is about all I'm doing in the fall. And I've been working several months getting ready for it. And kind of a year ago, I went to Europe in the fall with my Lilly Endowment grant, and I had a little show at the Arts Garden in the spring with a lot of European work
mm-hmm.
and a lot of street scenes. And that kind of inspired me for this. And I kept thinking, boy, I wanted to do this show at the University of Indianapolis and call it Town and Country and show, you know, countrysides as well as some cityscapes.
So the work you had been doing from your Creative Renewal grant, so those were city scenes from places you visited in Europe?
Yes, London, Amsterdam, and Paris.
Okay, and had you ever done any sort of cityscapes in Indianapolis before?
Not really.
Okay.
No, that was pretty much my first time, and that was kind of based on studying figure and figure on the streets, and so they would be little figures in settings, and it would be mm-hmm. kind of like the scale. These are bigger. These pieces I'm doing are like 12 by 12. Those were really little, like 3 by 5s. But these are bigger pieces on Indianapolis that I've kind of shown just some snapshots of Indianapolis. You know, there's, I've named them their streets, like South Street or North College, mm-hmm. or rather than naming
what's being shown, but sort of the location where it's at. Like your North College piece, I know, is actually, I got the great experience of driving by one night on North College in Broad Ripple and in front of the Vogue, and I saw you out on the sidewalk, I mean, there with your easel and your paints and you're working, and it was one of those, you know, sort of dark nights, but with lots of, you know, neon and great lights going on, and you know, it's hot summer night, and I'm driving by, I'm like, what is Douglas doing out there painting?
You know, that was
so
nice
that was
night
you were working
show.
on the piece that features the Vogue, but again called North College. That one's, you know, I've only just seen some small representations of this, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the show.
Good.
But the one of North College with the Vogue, it looks like, I mean, so much neon and bright lights, you know, popping out of the darkness, of course. But again, that seems, I look at it and I recognize your style, but it seems so different from the work that I'm used to seeing of yours,
right.
Which is, you know, lit by sunlight and great, you know, grassy plains and flowers.
Well, you know, I'm growing as an artist. I think it's all an evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've done the Red Keys for years because I'm a big Red Key Tavern fan, and I love that. And I've done some interiors, and they're kind of fun, and they're kind of dark and neon-y. But, I mean, those always, I just sell those as quickly as I get them done. But, you know, that front of that neon is kind of similar to the Vogue,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the same time frame, kind of. And so I think this is just, this just adds in the whole mix, and, you know, I'm able to handle these. Now, the whole show is not this, and I think the whole show would be just overwhelming, because, you know, my paintings, I think, I try to depict a mood or a calmness or a feeling or an atmosphere in my paintings. And like what you've picked up on this one with the Vogue, I've picked that up. I've picked up kind of that night street scene and, mm-hmm. you know, that red neon and that pink and kind of jazzy neon and that glow that it puts out. But,
now, another one I want to mention that's on the postcard that that is advertising the show, and again, it's called Paints Town and Country, and so it's not all town, but another one that's featured is Washington and Meridian, and this has just, you know, a number of buildings in it, and I can't wait to see it up close, because, again, what's different in this piece compared to many of the other pieces, there's a lot. It's a lot of very geometric shapes. I mean, hard lines, buildings, right. Streets, lampposts.
A lot of that architecture and a lot of that perspective I learned so well, 30 years ago at Heron. See, it's coming back.
It's coming back.
Yeah.
How was that for you to revisit, I mean, this style and that type of subject matter?
You know, it's been fun.
Yeah.
It's been fun. You know, I think that it's kind of like I do a lot of figure drawing in the winter and mm-hmm. at the Art Center, and you know, it's getting over there and drawing figure is kind of balances out after you've been painting landscapes or seascapes or florals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do so many florals in the spring because I have such a following on my florals, especially the peonies and the lilacs. And I'll try to get a couple of those in this show just because everybody wants to see them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever I've been doing in the spring. But
sure.
This kind of balances it. I think it's kind of like when an athlete trains and they do, like, swimmers run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of the same idea.
Is it slightly less forgiving, though, to try to paint something that is so well known? I mean, if you paint, let's say, a landscape or a seascape, and you know, and I look at it and think, oh, it's beautiful, but I don't necessarily know exactly, you know, where you were standing on the beach or in the field when you painted it, and I may not have a great visual memory of what that spot's supposed to look like.
Right.
So I'm sort of taking your word for it. But with these pieces, you know, these are areas of town that people know pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There's still some artist liberties. I mean, I do some photography so that I can double-check perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it is my interpretation still, and you know how my style is pretty impressionistic.
Yes.
These look pretty tight, but of course, you know, on the postcard invitation, they're smaller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're reduced, so that sharpens everything up. But still, again, I think people have to remember when they're looking at cityscapes and street scenes is, you know, if they want a photograph, take a photograph. So this has to be,
right.
You know, you're kind of getting into my heart and soul a little bit here and how I envision that scene. And even the one on the postcard in the center of that,
mm-hmm.
it's a little plaza down on South Street, and it's kind of a campus, one of those corporate campuses. You know, I tried to, you can start to see the landscape coming into that with the,
sure.
the distance and the sidewalks and all.
Now, as you mentioned, I mean, this show features quite an abundance of your work in many
mm-hmm.
different styles. So there will be the florals and the seascapes. How large is this show? And this is, again, down at University of Indianapolis at the DeHaan Fine Arts Center Gallery.
Right. Let's see. You know what? I forgot to bring my inventory today, but I think we have 50 or 60 pieces, and I don't have an exact count.
It's this is really quite a big exhibit.
It's a big show. There's little pieces. There's some larger pieces. I'm very pleased with it.
Excellent. Now, you had a show not too long ago at the Richmond Museum of Art.
I did.
And which had a great catalog that went with it. It was sort of a retrospective of your career.
Well, kind of a history up till now.
So, but this is different
right.
in some ways. I mean,
you know, like probably the top rung of what I shoot for would be a museum show. And to get a museum show is tough while you're living. I mean,
mm-hmm.
as a working, living artist. And
mm-hmm.
so that was quite an honor to be invited to Richmond, and we actually did that book, and it had a lot of history, and then it was kind of a catalog of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really great about that was everything was for sale, and that is one thing that I always am pretty adamant about. I want everything to be for sale because I want those people that support me and follow me to really be able to enjoy my pieces,
mm-hmm.
you know. But and the university falls very, very high in what I'm shooting for, because universities are about, you know, influencing and showing students a lot of different things. I'm really excited about how I fall into the mix at this particular time, because they have a really nice assortment of artists that they're showing this year, and I'm kind of excited to kick it off.
Yeah.
You know, I kick off the school year, and
mm-hmm.
and so we'll be up for, what, until September?
Yeah, the show goes through September 25th, and and the actual opening's on the 28th, though you'll be hanging it a couple days before that on the 24th.
Right. So it's open to the public if they want to slip in earlier next week, but then Friday night is our opening from 5 to 8.
Now, let me ask you this. I did mention Penrod earlier. Are you still going to be able to get out of
Penrod?
No,
I'm not going to make it this year because I'm doing this show, and this is very exciting. So, you know, you have to kind of choose, and it's all give and take, and I've had a great time at Penrod, and that's not to say that I won't be back, but this year I'm going to have to pass.
Well, certainly understandable since
thank you.
You know, most of your work's going to be
on
exhibit down
there. It's going to be fun, and we're going to try to run back down there. You know, I'm going to try to be in and out, and what's fun about a show like this is I'll visit with the students, I'll visit with the public, and I really haven't done that much on that part of, in that side of town yet, and I'm really excited I was invited to do this.
Travis DiNicola with artist Douglas David. David's new show, Douglas David Paints Town and Country, can be seen at the University of Indianapolis's Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center Gallery from August 24th through September 25th. Now, the opening reception is from 5 to 8 p.m. on Friday, August 28th. You can find out more information at douglasdavid.com, douglasdavid.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Start with Art is the annual business and arts luncheon organized by the Arts Council of Indianapolis and attended by more than 1,000 artists and arts supporters. Sharon Gamble invited the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Mike Knight to tell us about this year's luncheon.
And you know the art season is about to start when it's time for Start with Art, but it's kind of early this year.
It is. It's one of those funny timing things that if we wanted the room at the Sagamore Ballroom, we needed to adjust our timing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're sort of always busy, and that part of the fall, that early fall window is one where there's cult stuff going on. There's, you know, just a lot of stuff happening and sort of ramping up.
Yeah, it all ramps up at once, it feels like.
Yeah, you know, everybody wraps up their summer vacations and then really starts to pound on it again. So we had to shift just a little bit early, but that's kind of nice.
That's
good. Sure.
So it is Thursday, September 3rd.
That's right.
As we're having this conversation, you still have some tickets available.
We do have tickets available. They're $60 per person or a table of 10 for $600, and a portion of that ticket is tax deductible as well. So of course we hope we can see you there.
Absolutely. I'm curious. I know at the beginning, even before you were at the Arts Council, the idea was to invite about an equal number of business people and artists / arts administrators. Is that still about a 50-50 mix?
It really is. I mean, we're trying to bring together both communities because they exist sort of in this interlocking fashion throughout the year. But it's one of those things where sometimes none of us are very good at stopping and taking a second to appreciate all the work and all the sort of partnerships that are out there. And certainly the arts community and the business community are this ongoing partnership. So this is that one chance to kind of, you know, before everybody really does ramp up, this is our chance to stop and say thanks, get ready to see some incredible performances and events in the upcoming 2010 art season. grab a great lunch and be wowed by some very special performances and speakers on that day.
And I always look around the room and say, who's running the city? Everybody of importance is in this room.
Yeah, it's a great, it really is a great event, in part because there's so many people from so many different walks of life there that day. But I also think that hopefully when people leave, there's this real sense of community and working together and a sense of possibility for the upcoming season and upcoming months that everybody will go through.
And we'll talk about the keynote artist in a moment, but the other thing I'm always amazed by is how well you and your colleagues at the Arts Council organize entertainment from the moment people walk into the venue. They'll be greeted by some kind of music, some kind of dance, and there's entertainment throughout this midday event. And it cannot help but sort of jazz people up. You know, it's you literally and figuratively feel the pulse of the arts community. Can you tell us about some of the performers lined up this year?
Well, I know that we're still working on one of the special performances. Again, we've got a keynote presentation and performance from Angela Brown. But I think in general, the way that I always look at this is we have this ton of pressure. We've got all the people from the arts community are coming, and we've got to put on a blockbuster show for them. So, you know, everything is done by design, and everything really, really, really is mapped out, honestly, to the minute. We try and cram as much entertainment and inspiration and insight, I suppose, into that 11:30 to 1:30 window of time as we can possibly get, and still have a little bit of time so that people can say hi to one another. there's a lot of catching up that goes on, as you know, from people who really only see each other maybe this one time a year. So it's both kind of a performance and kind of a party you know, altogether just a great celebration.
Absolutely. And Angela Brown, local girl makes good for the handful of people who've been under a rock and don't know who Angela Brown is.
Right. Well, Angela Brown is a really internationally acclaimed opera singer. She's performed with the Metropolitan Opera in New York. She has also performed, I'm not quite sure of the number of times, but I believe many times with Indianapolis Opera. She's got an incredible voice. She's also just really funny and I guess maybe sassy is a great way to say it. And I think she's going to have some very meaningful things to say about her childhood here in Indianapolis, but also the important role that the arts played in her development and career. If my memory serves me correctly, I think she was contemplating a career in nursing and also a career as a singer, and she ended up, of course, going down this path. So I think she's probably going to have some very personal things to say about the role the arts have played in her own development and why she chose that direction and what that's meant to her these years later.
And the other thing that's really cool about her career is that she's a little like Kathleen Battle, a new generation Kathleen Battle, in that she sings high art songs. She can sing everything from opera to gospel to pop to jazz, and she has enormous charisma.
Yeah, she really does. Again, she's just very funny, very, you know, sort of, you know,
very down to earth.
Yeah, and I want to say diva-esque in her personality, but not in her attitude in that sense. She's just very charismatic. I think that's a great way to say it. The chemistry of the room changes when she enters is maybe another way to look at it.
Speaking of important roles played by people who are sometimes more behind the scenes than they should be, we'll find out about the winners of the Artie Awards. And I know those were established to honor some people who maybe we don't perceive them as stars, but they truly are.
Yeah, the Artie Awards were created to have some formal recognition of the business people, businesses that are sort of outspoken, tireless advocates for the arts in Indianapolis. There's an award for a large business, a small business, individuals, and also a special award for somebody whose work over the past 12 months has really, really been noteworthy. I think obviously each year there are so many people who deserve to be recognized, and they're really very many worthy recipients of this award. But I also think just this, the sheer volume, you know, we'll have 1,200 people at Start With Art, and that I think is a reflection of the number of advocates, business and arts community alike, that are working on behalf of the arts in Central Indiana. So I don't want to sound too sort of broad here, but I would say that, you know, we have a lot of people who deserve those awards and then that recognition. We're very
winners.
Fortunate to have that kind of support.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know it's always busy in the offices at the Arts Council, but it's kind of extra busy right now. Among other things, you're looking for a new executive director.
That's right.
President.
Yep. That's right. Greg Charleston left July 1st. Greg had been with the Arts Council for 10 years. Dave Lawrence, who is a vice president of the Arts Council, is now serving as the acting president while that search is in progress. The board of the Arts Council has put together a search committee probably about a month or so ago. In mid-July, they sent out a survey to a number of arts organizations and key constituents, soliciting what kind of direction those folks want to see the Arts Council take so that they can more sort of accurately fill that position. So that was the first step.
Can you share any of those findings with us, or is that confidential?
I don't think it's confidential. I think, understandably, the arts organizations are eager to have the Arts Council help them market their performances, programs, events, and exhibitions to help develop new audiences for them. And, you know, I think these things are probably from a business perspective, you know, sort of readily understandable. Everybody, I'm assuming, in every business right now is eager to find new customers and new audiences, and any sort of assistance they can get in finding those folks is just critical. I mean, these are still tough times and tight times, and so everybody's looking for a way to map, you know, their future and their existence into that future. So they're looking to the Arts Council for that kind of assistance, largely. Beyond that, I don't think there is anything that I can reveal that would say, you know, this is one singular direction or
sure.
One singular need or request. I think that's probably the overarching consensus from that survey.
And then the next step is?
And the next step is the board solicits candidates for that and reviews them based on that basis and also, of course, their experience with the arts and knowledge of Central Indiana and also how the Arts Council itself will evolve as funding changes for the arts here in Central Indiana. We, of course, continue to search for funding mechanisms and granting opportunities and things of that nature. But and like everything else in the world, everything is evolving. And so we're trying to adjust what we do to what that next step in the evolution of the arts community in Central Indiana is.
Helps to stay very flexible.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is the next big event for the Arts Council? Start With Art. You have about 3.5 minutes to take a breath before you roll on into the next.
Sure. The next big event is October 15th through the 17th. We have the National Next Generation or Next Audience Arts Summit. That will be held at a handful of different venues here in Indianapolis. But essentially, it's a follow-up or the second iteration, if you will, of the Art Summit that we held in 2007. For that initial event, we had about 200 people from 14 or 15 states from across the country. They're coming here as part of a program developed with the Arts Council of Indianapolis and Next Generation Consulting that was designed to find ways to develop that next audience, the key audience with a demographic of roughly 25 to 40-year-olds that so many arts organizations and now so many businesses have got to look toward, again, to sort of tie down their existence into the next generation, because this is a young consuming market, if you will, and everybody has really got to find a way to speak to them in ways they want to be spoken with, and in the venues in which they'll hear, you know, that information. So we're, again, trying to help folks do that. In this case, we're having experts in nonprofit fundraising, a marketing person from Walt Disney World, a Web 2.0 expert, and then Rebecca Ryan, a futurist with Next Generation Consulting, to kind of oversee these workshops and sort of sharing best idea practice, sharing sessions, again, designed to find ways to engage and interact with new and next audiences. So that's the next big thing. And then we'll take a little break, and we'll be into Art and Soul for 2010.
Yeah, I want to put a plug in. I went to that Next Generation Summit in 2007, and it was enormously, not only informative, but exhilarating, which sounds like, you know, seminar and exhilarating or conference and exhilarating are seldom in the same sentence.
Yeah.
But just the sheer energy and the idea sharing was astonishing.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of this is the content itself, and then some of it is the idea that, you know, there are new ways for us to communicate. There are new opportunities. By and large, they're creative exciting in the way you can execute them, in the way you can get involved. I think they just sort of give people a perspective and a direction that maybe they often don't have. You know, it's one of those things where so many people, so many professionals, regardless of what industry or vocation or area, are so busy on a day-to-day basis, and you get so wrapped up in that part that you can't step back and see this sort of vision for the future. And I think the seminar, the summit, gives folks that little chance to step back and see the horizon a little bit in a really nice and enthusiastic and encouraging way. You know, I think the other thing, too, is that on the one hand, it's about the arts and finding the next audience and patron. But I also think in a broader sense, it's about finding the next customer, almost regardless of what business you're in, because it's the same set of needs, the same buying habits, the same, all those things are all the same.
Whether you're selling a theater performance or a cup of coffee.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Sharon Gamble with Mike Knight of the Arts Council of Indianapolis. This year's Start with Art will be Thursday, September 3rd, from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Registration opens at 11 a.m., and the program begins promptly at 11:30. And Start with Art is at the Indiana Convention Center, Sagamore Ballroom at 100 South Capitol Avenue in downtown Indianapolis. You can get more information and tickets at indyarts.org. That's indyarts.org. Sharon.
Travis.
I've had a lot of people comment about our deep fried calendar that we did
really?
About the state fair a couple weeks ago.
That was kind of fun.
Yeah, well, a lot of people seem to think so. So I thought that since this is the last weekend of the state fair, that maybe we'd start it off with some things going on there this weekend as part of our calendar that we call
What'll We Do? Not just What'll We Eat That's Deep Fried.
What'll We Eat That's Deep Fried, that's right. I still need to find a really good corn dog. But I did want to mention that this Sunday, August 23rd, at the state fair, at the Possum Holler Opry House, which is near the Pioneer Village Barn, there is going to be the Central Indiana Folk Music and Mountain Dulcimer Society's Big Band. They are playing from 1 until 3 p.m. on Sunday. So,
I bet you're all keyed up for that, aren't you?
Oh, that's clever. Keyed up for the dulcimer. So if you've not had a chance to get out the State Fair and you're looking for some great entertainment, check it out this Sunday from 1 to 3, or maybe you're going back for a second or third or fourth visit or whatever it is that you do
if
when you go out there. And
you haven't tried the pork burger sandwich with the red gold tomato yet.
There you go. You could do that too.
See, that's not deep fried.
That's not everything's deep fried.
In life. but if you have happened to overindulge
Possum Holler
in,
Opry House, what a great name.
I'm overcome.
Okay. Yes.
If you happen to have overindulged in deep fried things at the Indiana State Fair or anywhere else, you might want to, if you're a woman, check out Speaking of Women's Health. It's the 12th annual conference. It's actually put together by WFYI and some great partners in the health business, and it's coming up on Friday, August 28th. There's still some tickets available, and it's a day-long conference with keynote speakers, breakout topics, health screenings, seminars and workshops to help you lower your stress level, control your cholesterol, and just have a better balanced life. And there is an art to doing that. You can find out more about Speaking of Women's Health at WFYI.org, and there's nothing deep fried there.
That's right. Speaking of other festivals and fairs going on, the Fringe Festival starts this weekend and is going on now through August 30th. And if you've not grabbed your guide, they were in Nuvo a couple weeks ago. You can also pick them up pretty much at any business up and down Mass Avenue or any of the theaters where Fringe is taking place, at Theater on the Square, at the Phoenix Theater, at Earth House, at Comedy Sports. You can grab a schedule, and you should really get a schedule, because that's about the only way to do this successfully. There's something
Absolutely.
Like what now they've even had more shows, 270 shows or something over 10 days.
You need a schedule so you know where you're supposed to be and when.
You need a schedule for the schedule.
Right.
Plus there's free performances going on at their outdoor stage and all types of other stuff. So what you need to do, if you missed the interview that I did with Pauline Moffat, the director, a couple weeks ago of The Fringe, you need to get a backer button. And with the backer button, that money goes right to the Fringe. They're $3. You can buy those anywhere up and down the avenue at any of the theaters. And the backer button then allows you to buy tickets for any of the other shows. So you get the button first for $3. And then the tickets for the shows, you can basically get them at the door, and they're $10 a piece. All shows are, less than an hour and always interesting.
And all of the $10 gate goes directly to the artist. That's
yes,
why
it does.
There's
Which
two,
is a,
two different things there.
A very, very cool thing. And that's how it works. And, you can go see a couple shows, see a dozen shows. Who knows? There's dance, there's opera, there's theater, vaudeville, magic, all types of stuff. So go Fringe.
Performance art. And if you have kids and you're thinking, oh, I don't know, go to IndieFringe.org and find out whether or not the show you're thinking about is family-friendly, because there are a number of family-friendly.
There are a lot that are very family-friendly, and there's also some that are not.
There are some, yes. There's some you'd best not take the little ones to. You might want to have a little discretion on how young the kids are that you take to the IMA Films on the Terrace. That are coming up on Friday, the 21st of August, V for Vendetta. On Friday the 28th, and this is the final one of the season, if you can
Where
see...
Where did the summer go?
I know. If you can see the fishing line and the coat wire that the flying saucers are suspended from, yes, you will know you are watching, in fact, a great classic, Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Wow.
If you've never seen it, you haven't seen
fun.
It. No, you need to see it, Travis. You
have out there on the terrace.
You like science fiction and fantasy just enough that you would love this. Yes, Summer Nights film series. And, the sun's starting to go down earlier, so
yeah,
it is
true.
About time to end those for the year.
That's true. I know, and we're already thinking about fall things, including a new fall exhibition that actually opens on August 28th. At the Indianapolis Arts Center, and it's the title's Out with the Old, In with the New. It's a change of season, so a change of exhibitions, and it's actually a show that features both student and faculty artists who've received some sort of award as part of the 2008 student show and artist competition that the Arts Center does. And this year it's featuring Shirley Carr, who is the 2008 Faculty of the Year artist, and will be exhibiting her works, as well as David Owen, who's a three-time Best of Student Show winner, will be exhibiting his works. So there's going to be some great works there, as well as a work by Pat Herring entitled In the Eye of the Needle. And these are all, of course, at the Indianapolis Arts Center, which just as a reminder, their exhibitions are always free.
Free is good.
Free is good.
We like free.
Yeah. And, you know, now's a great time of year to start thinking about sign up for a class up there, too. So maybe go up to the Art Center, check out the exhibits, and find out what classes you might want to take this fall.
And they have check out, too, and I have a couple of girlfriends and I are trying to align our schedules to take advantage of the fact that they're doing some short-term and sort of sampler or drop-in classes,
yeah,
where you just go for one Saturday afternoon.
Just show up
or whatever
and take a class for an afternoon.
Yeah, yeah. And some of them even involve cocktails, you know? Margaritas and modeling and things like that.
That sounds like a great afternoon.
That's enough to get people to go to the Art Center's website. And while you're there, you might also see if you can still score yourself a ticket for Art Sparkle this Saturday, August 27th, 6:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. You might have to be working fast if you're hearing this program on Saturday afternoon, but just go. You have something appropriate to wear in your closet. Buckwheat Zydeco is the entertainment and great, amazing food and entertainment of all kinds, visual entertainment, of course, as is appropriate. And you can find out more at indplisartcenter.org. That's INDPLS artcenter.org.
Perhaps you're one of those people like me who kind of misses having Gen Con in town. You know, it was, well, it's always a lot
is
of fun.
That why
to...
you have those funny shoes on and that hat? Okay, that's what explains
there's
everything.
There's nothing like driving down Meridian Street and seeing Obi-Wan Kenobi walking up on the other way and a Chewbacca, you know,
yeah,
crossing at the crosswalk.
You're used to seeing.
And, you know,
yeah,
you kind of get used to it for a couple
uh-huh.
days and you miss it. Anyway, if you're already missing Gen Con, you can still check out the exhibit, The Cursed Chateau, which is at IMOCA, the Indianapolis Museum of Contemporary Art. This was an exhibit that actually opened during Gen Con, and it was a collaboration with IMOCA and Gen Con, with artist curator Timothy Hutchings bringing together a whole bunch of different artists, different types of artists, sculptors and painters and musicians and who are all people who enjoy things like Dungeons and Dragons. And so he's had them create the illustrations for an adventure game book called The Cursed Chateau, and that is what is on exhibit at IMOCA right now. So if you need a little bit more Gen Con in your life, go down to IMOCA.
If
you have no idea what I'm talking about, then...
if you just heard blah, 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 Ginger, then maybe this next item will be of interest to you, and I have no idea how to make a segue, so I'm just jumping.
Well, with a segue, you get two wheels and then a gyroscope in the middle.
Oh!
Oh, and a platform on top.
I could make my own?
Make your
they
own.
Come in a kit?
Sure.
Let's get some of those Gen Con folks back. There, a lot of them are skilled engineers and could put one together for me. Anyway, you know, there was a real-life legal case and crime that involved Nathan Leopold and Richard Loeb back in the 1920s, and all kinds of films and books and plays have been written about the Leopold and Loeb story, including a play by John Logan called Never the Sinner, the Leopold and Loeb story. The Theater Within, which performs at the Church Within in the Fountain Square area, is looking for people to audition for their production of this play. The auditions are on Sunday, August 30th and Monday, August 31st at 7 at the theater. You can get more information by going online and going to the website of the Theater Within. Rehearsals begin September 14th, and performance dates are late October and early November. So check that out. Lots to do beyond eating fried food.
Very good. Well, we hope you enjoy the last weekend of the State Fair, and we'll be back next weekend with more of
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Australian John Meehan is a former principal dancer with the American Ballet Theatre, former artistic director of the Royal Winnipeg Ballet and of the American Ballet Theatre Studio, as well as the Hong Kong Ballet. And now he is the artistic chairman of the new Indianapolis City Ballet, which has its opening gala on Saturday, September 12th, at the Murat Theatre. The inaugural performance for the Indianapolis City Ballet will feature more than a dozen of the world's best ballet dancers together for one night only. Travis DeNicola spoke by phone with John Meehan, who was at Vassar College, where he is a professor of dance.
You've had an amazing career as a dancer, a choreographer, artistic director. I must say that I think some of the best ballet performances that I've ever seen were presented by the Royal Winnipeg Ballet. I was fortunate enough to see them when they were touring, when you were the artistic director there back in the early 90s.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah, they were good days, I have to say, and we put together some interesting programs and had some very nice dancers in the company.
Well, you've really got an amazing career, and I know recently working in Hong Kong and now at Vassar. How did this end up that you are involved with this group here in Indianapolis?
Well, actually, Kevin Hess, who is the son of Bob Hess, and Bob is really the man who's Bob Hess and Jane Fortune were the people whose idea this was. But Kevin has worked very closely with Bob on the idea of Indianapolis City Ballet, the launching of this initiative. And Kevin and his friend is a friend of a friend of mine, Jolinda Menendez. And when Kevin was talking to Jolinda, he suggested, you know, he said to her, "I'd like to find an artistic chair." And she said, "You've got to get John." And he'd known of me, but and we'd actually met once before when I was working at American Ballet Theatre. So there was a little history there. I guess Kevin talked to me, and it sounded like a great idea, and then I spoke with Bob and Jane and came on board.
Now, what will your role specifically be? Because David Ho Choi, the choreographer, is here with Dance Kaleidoscope, I know, is choreographing a piece. Is your role one of bringing these dancers together? Or tell me a bit more of how it works since you're operating from out of town.
Right. Well, this gala is sort of like a sampler of just wonderful bits and pieces of ballet, all different styles and from all over the world, and a sampler of dancers, of some of the world's great dancers from all over the world. So I actually haven't choreographed anything in the program, but I've chosen all of the, I've chosen the program. So that means I've invited the dancers and I've collaborated with them on choosing their repertoire. And hopefully make an evening that is kind of a broad sweep of the world choreographically and and also as far as dancers are concerned.
Can you talk a bit about some of the samples that we'll see, if you will?
Sure.
This is really quite an extraordinary evening. I know that a number of friends of mine in the dance world are actually going to be traveling from other states to come and see this, because it is such a unique experience to have such a gathering of sort of high-quality dancers in this sort of format.
Right. Well, you know, when I started to think about what I wanted to present, one of the criteria that we all agreed on, Bob, Jane, Kevin, myself, was that it really should not be an evening that's bogged down in old-fashioned ballet, but rather should have a kind of a forward-looking focus. And so I've included a couple of pieces that are traditional, a couple of neoclassical pieces when dance moved forward a little bit, and then quite a few contemporary pieces. So you get a sense of dance going ahead, the future of dance, where it is now and what it might become in the future, rather than just seeing something that's going to show off the technique of a lot of different dancers. Mm-hmm. Now, we have some of that kind of rep, but we also have, you know, rep that's going to show dancers in a different way, the things that ballet technique and choreographers combine to present these days. We have a couple of pieces that you would normally see in an old-fashioned gala, Dion and Actéon, and a pas de deux from Corsair, not the normal one, but the pas d'esclave from Act One of Corsair. We will move to the more romantic in some Romeo and Juliet, the Manon bedroom pas de deux, both of Kenneth McMillan. We have Balanchine in Stars and Stripes, a kind of fun, upbeat, and technically very interesting piece, a real crowd pleaser. We have very cute piece, a couple of wonderful male solos, actually. One that really shows off the dancer jumping and where that dance came from in more kind of a folk dancey way in Gopak. We have a fabulous piece by David Parsons called Caught, which one you never forget once you've seen it. We have a couple of really interesting, really brand new kind of cutting edge pieces of choreography. One's called Mono Lisa, one's called Radio and Juliet, and they're both stunning examples of contemporary choreography.
And then you've also got some pretty amazing dancers coming in as well and representing American Ballet Theater as well as New York City Ballet and other, and you mentioned the Parsons Dance Company.
Yep, absolutely.
Great, great dancers.
And dancers from the Kirov as well. Really, dancers from all over the world. New York City Ballet, ABT, the Kirov, Stuttgart. You know, it was my idea that, I know David Hochoy, we used to take class together in New York City, and it was my idea to invite him to choreograph something, because I know he's done such fabulous work out there with Dancer's Kaleidoscope. And so we talked about bringing him into New York and working with a couple of the dancers there. And so he's put a piece of his called Fascinating Rhythm on three of the dancers. So that was very exciting. We also have one other piece, a very funny piece called Le Grand Pas de Deux by a contemporary European choreographer, Christian Spuk. So all in all, it's a broad range of choreography, but a lot of the pieces really are self-explanatory. They're like you don't need a great deal of knowledge about dance to enjoy them, and they're they're real crowd pleasers.
It'll be a very accessible concert. I mean, both for people who are fans of ballet, but certainly for people who maybe are looking for a great introduction. I can't imagine a better sampling.
Yeah, exactly. And the dancers are just second to none, you know. Some absolutely wonderful, wonderful talent. Some that people have heard of, people like Julie Kent, who's, you know, arguably the prima ballerina of American Ballet Theatre. She's been thrilling audiences for many years and actually worked a lot in Bloomington, the Indiana University. She's been going there for years and teaching and performing, I think, in their Nutcracker. So people down there know her very well.
And she's, of course, known for her work with the ABT.
American Ballet Theatre, yes. And she's bringing with her one of the brightest stars in the ballet world, David Halberg. He's new on the scene, and he's just superb. He's sought after by everyone in the world. We have two wonderful dancers coming from the Kirov Company, the Matvienkos, Anastasia and Dennis. We have a couple of fabulous dancers from Stuttgart, a Spanish lady called Alicia Amatrain, who is really not that well known, but when you see her, you never forget her. She's absolutely extraordinary. And her partner is wonderful, Jason Riley. He's actually Canadian, trained in Canada, but had his career so far in Stuttgart. But I think these days he's sharing himself a bit between two companies. Joaquin Duluth, who's a Spaniard who has worked in America now for the last 10 or so years. He's now City Ballet as a principal dancer, and he recently won an amazingly prestigious competition, the Benoit de la Danse, which is based in Russia, but it's they look for nominations for performances from all over the world, and very competitive, difficult to win, and Joaquin just won that. He's bringing with him one of the fastest rising stars in New York City Ballet, a Californian lady called Tyler Peck, who I was watching rehearse just the other day. She's quite amazing. And then we have one of the fastest rising stars in American Ballet Theatre, Sarah Lane, who trained most of her life in Rochester, New York. And she's coming and dancing with a Russian dancer who now works at American Ballet Theatre, Gennady Saveliev. So it's there's also a fabulous dancer from the David Parsons Company in Miguel Quiñones, who is dancing Court. It's just a tremendous program and a tremendous group of stars. And, you know,
I'm trying to imagine the logistics of getting this all together. It's got to be extremely complicated. Dancers from all over the world, and I mean, how much time when you all come to Indianapolis will you have together to rehearse and put this on? Will it be rather brisk, I would imagine.
Yes. Well, with programs like this, you know, the convoluted part is getting the program put together and the dancers to agree to come, because many of the dancers that you invite people and they're not available. They have a performance somewhere else the night before and they can't make it, or, you know, they have a performance that night somewhere. So that's the first part of the convoluted exercise. And the second part is to find repertoire that the dancers can do that you want on the program, and that will make an evening, a balanced program, or an evening that that is the kind of evening you want to present. So that in a way is logistically the much more difficult part. They take care of rehearsing themselves, and they bring a ready product to us. So what we will do is on the Friday night we will do our first tech run through. And then Saturday afternoon, we'll do a dress rehearsal, and the program will be Saturday night, and people will leave on Sunday. So it's going to be, you know, that part is fairly brief.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be an exciting challenge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, this is really just the beginning, though. This is our announcement to the public that we're serious, and this is the kind of thing we want to do. This is the kind of quality of our programs and the kind of repertoire direction we want to go in. But this is a gala beginning to the Indianapolis City Ballet. We're hoping that down the line there will be a real company that's based in Indianapolis, and it'll be very high quality. It'll be more contemporary than classical, and it'll belong to Indianapolis.
Travis DiNicola with the artistic chairman of the new Indianapolis City Ballet, John Meehan. For more information and tickets for the upcoming An Evening with the Stars Ballet Gala on September 12th, visit IndianapolisCityBallet.org, IndianapolisCityBallet.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m.
I'll get to chat with NPR's puzzle master and New York Times crossword editor Will Shortz, as well as with local businessman Mickey Maurer, who has created a few crossword puzzles himself.
And what's a six-letter word for a conductor who was highly active in Vienna in 1900?
Let's see, does it start with an M?
Starts with an M. I get to find out about the Mahler Project coming up all year. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
So please join us next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter is made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by grants from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and from the City of Indianapolis, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.